From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today on the program, we're asking, can you blame the LDS Church in part for a staggering increase in youth suicides in Utah? The church, as you know, has some controversial policies about homosexuality and same-sex relationships. But is there a direct connection here? It's a complicated story when you take into account all of the factors at hand. So we're going to be asking what we can say about the causes of youth suicide in this state and how religion can hurt or help. We'll be right back.
KUER's new project, The Hive Mind, puts you right in the newsroom with our reporters. Here's how it works. Look under the News and Programs tab at KUER.org, click on The Hive Mind, and you'll see what one of our reporters is working on. Maybe it's affordable housing or national parks fees. It changes. You tell us what you want to know, vote on other listeners' questions, and we'll try to figure it out. It's like this. The news is for you, and you should have some say in how we make it. Join The Hive Mind at KUER.org.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Something is going on in Utah that is causing the youth suicide rate to skyrocket. And look, naturally people are going to make this connection between the LDS Church and those deaths. The church has some controversial policies about homosexuality and same-sex relationships. So it would seem to follow that rather than finding community and spiritual guidance and love, that religion in this case is causing guilt and shame and a sense of hopelessness. But can we actually say that? That is there evidence for a connection there? And this is a complicated story when you take into account all of the factors that are at play. It turns out suicides are skyrocketing throughout the Intermountain West in general. And there are studies that show young people who are religious are actually less likely to think about or act on suicidal thoughts. So today in the program, we're asking, what is it that we can actually say for sure about the causes of youth suicide in Utah? And how is it that religion is helping or hurting? Joining us first on the program is Lee Hale. He covers religion and education for KUER. He has a story this morning on LGBTQ youth suicides in the LDS Church. You can find it on KUER.org. And I should also mention that if you or someone you know needs help, there is a number for Utah's crisis hotline. That number is 801-587-3000. And there are links to more resources on our website, radiowest.org. Let me give you another number. It's the number to join the conversation if you like, 801-585-WEST. Our email address is radiowest@kuer.org. Lee Hale, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Doug.
So, okay, what do you think is the question kind of at the heart of this? It seems like it's the LDS Church's position, which has been controversial and something that we've talked about a lot. There was a very controversial policy in November of 2015. Is that causing young people to contemplate or commit suicide? Like, is that the essential question here?
I think it's an attractive link. I think that if you reference, you know, Psychology 101 as a college freshman, you know, correlation is not causation, yeah. Right? But, it, you know, I think we're seeing a rise in suicide at the same time from, you know, Prop 8 to the November 2015 policy, you know, which said that homosexuals are apostates and their children can't be baptized without special permission. So I think that's a connection I see a lot of people wanting to make.
Because they see these spikes?
They see the spikes and a steady increase.
Yes.
Why this got on my radar was last month, Dan Reynolds from Imagine Dragons, who just launched a new documentary called Believer, which is about this topic.
We had him on the show.
Right. He was on the Ellen DeGeneres show last month, and it was just interesting to hear her say that the suicide rate is directly linked to the shame Mormon kids feel from the LDS Church.
Because she just came out and said there is a connection there.
As if that is the leading cause.
Yeah.
The reality is suicide research is extremely difficult. Suicide attempts are much easier to research because you can interview the person after they've attempted. You can't interview the person after they've completed a suicide.
Yeah.
And so there's not a lot of satisfying data to draw on except for numbers alone. And that's what we're looking at in Utah and in the Mountain West is we have numbers and we are seeing an increase. And Utah's not too dissimilar from those other states. but we do have the unique cultural element here, which I think makes people wonder.
Yeah. How did the LDS Church react, if they did at all, to the implication, for example, on the Ellen DeGeneres show and other places that makes that connection? What are they saying or not saying?
Yeah, it's not new. Yeah. It was interesting to see it come out of Ellen's mouth, right? She has this really big platform. The church has been very supportive through statements of something like the Love Loud concert, which is a Dan Reynolds kind of new project, a concert that's happening this Saturday here at the Rice-Eccles Stadium at the University of Utah, which is reaching out to LGBT youth in Utah to raise acceptance and awareness. And so the church has been open to supporting those groups. We're saying that we appreciate what you're doing. But as far as actually tackling the issue at hand, they don't walk into that territory. You're not going to see spokespeople from the church really confirm this idea that church teachings, that cultural ideas could be a leading cause. They kind of avoid it.
This is such a strange position for the church to be in, I have to say, because in some ways, while they have this website, for example, and I wanted you to talk about this, where they talk about in kind of expansive, compassionate terms dealing with suicide, but they don't really talk about the LGBT part of it. So it just seems like a strange disconnect.
Right. And Dale Renland, who is featured prominently on that site, is a former surgeon. So they kind of got there. He's an apostle for the Mormon Church. He's one of the top leaders. And he says some really research-based remarks that I think are really, really good to hear. In fact, he says one of the major points is you can ask somebody if they're suicidal, and you know you can ask, you can kind of insert yourself, you can question. And I think the research shows that was a very important thing to say. You don't see them delving into causes as much. You know, you don't see them, and they aren't acknowledging the LGBT Mormon community, which is really disheartening. I think you have
they don't say anything at all about the LGBT community
right.
in that part.
There is a Mormon and Gays website that was launched a little while ago, and they do have a page there where they talk about
but
depression
and
suicide.
But not on the suicide
one. Not on the suicide one. And so I see two extremes here. One is this direct causal link. And on the other, it's maybe these suicide resources where they're not going to acknowledge that this is even a part of the problem. And people, I think, are stuck in the middle.
I want to ask about, it seems like the problem is, as you mentioned, that causal link that it just seems like common sense for a lot of people that a religious culture that condemns homosexual behavior, you know, people having gay sexual relationships or getting married, they could be basically excommunicated from the faith and their children deprived of certain blessings. That it would just make sense that would make some young people feel hopeless, but we can't make an actual connection here. What can we say?
Well, if you take a step back and look at the broader picture, think about things that lead to suicide, whether that's feelings of isolation, depression, anxiety, feeling you don't belong, feelings of trauma, experiences of trauma. Those are all much stronger cases to make because that's a much broader and much more researched conversation. And you can say that somebody who does not feel like they belong in the religious community, somebody who feels shame and guilt, an overwhelming amount, which can happen in Mormon communities, that does cause depression, anxiety, trauma. And so in that sense, I think it's easy for this conversation to immediately go to life or death, to go to these suicide numbers. But there's a much stronger case to make that simply put, LGBT Mormons are suffering. They're suffering because they don't feel included. They're suffering because they see doctrines of the church that they believe in or they want to belong to directly contradict their own experiences. In this case, you know, gay Mormons have a struggle.
Yeah.
We always group in LGBT. The T, transgender, they're not even acknowledged in church policy or doctrine. They're completely in the dark. So all those things can be linked to suicide ideation, to suicide attempts. And so there's a very strong point to be made. But when you jump to completed suicides, which is often the numbers people are using, that's where I think you're going to get some pushback because we don't have a satisfying link right now.
It's interesting. There's a term called the suicide corridor, and it's in the Intermountain West.
Right.
The suicide numbers are particularly high and going up. And so other people have offered other alternatives or at least other circumstances that could be contributing to this. And one of them is And I found this interesting altitude.
Right. And the altitude comes up a lot. And that's a physiological idea. I mean, it has to do with oxygen. It has to do with just how we operate in this climate and this elevation. I think the pushback there is that, well, something I find interesting is that that Utah is on par with these other mountain states, right? And I think the case could be made that the LDS Church could be helping improve suicide. But Utah is right there, kind of standard level. In that sense, whatever is hurting Utah, religion isn't necessarily improving that number or decreasing it clearly, if that makes sense.
Yeah. It's also interesting that the numbers, I think the really alarming numbers are in rural communities.
Yes. Yep. And that's something you also find in the Mountain West is there are a lot of rural communities.
Of course.
These aren't big city states. Yep. And there's a lot of causes to suicide, but a lot of that can come from just feeling isolated. It can come from addiction. Poverty can be an element, and you see these in rural communities, right? But in the Mormon community, the idea is that you can feel similar feelings of isolation just based on what your community is teaching you.
I suppose, and we should mention this, Lee, there's no way for you to say definitively, but I suppose it could be said, or this could be another consideration, that the West has kind of a conservative religious culture, a conservative political culture that may not be exactly a welcoming place for LGBTQ people, and so that may be a function as well.
Right. And I should say, I guess, bigger picture here, the thing I've been thinking about a lot in my reporting is that data is brought up, numbers are brought up, but when it comes to Mormons are storytelling people. They focus on individuals. They focus on the individual experience. If you tune into General Conference, you're going to hear a lot of stories, individual struggles, individual faith crisis or overcoming something like that.
And by definition, that's anecdotal.
Anecdotal. And that's where Mormons live. There's this idea that Jesus Christ, you know, in the New Testament would go after the one. He would leave the 99, you know, the flock, and go after the one. And so I see people get defensive with data, but Mormons by nature realize that one person's experience is valid. One person's experience is worth doing something about. There was a video that was released recently on the LDS.org website. It hasn't gotten a lot of traffic, but it's about bullying and suicide. It's about one Mormon's experience where they are bullied and they have these thoughts and they're worried and they have suicidal ideation. Well, bullying, you also can't make a causal link with.
Yeah.
But they're willing to tell that person's story.
But not willing to do that.
So I think that's what I sense from the Mormon LGBT community. It's not so much that the church needs to swallow this pill and say that we're causing death, but I think they just want more stories to be told. They want their story to be told, and that's a story of we love this church, we believe in this church, but the things you teach and the stigma that's around is hurting us, it's causing pain.
This gets us to this interesting dilemma by this group called Affirmation. Tell us a little bit about this. Tell us what the group is first, and then I want to get to the conflict, I guess, that's going on, or the dilemma that they're facing.
Right. Affirmation is the LGBT Mormon group. It says, you know, they say they're for LGBT Mormons, their friends, and their family. And there's a few of these groups in Utah. Affirmation has kind of made it clear that they're willing to work with the LDS Church, that they're willing to kind of be a partner. And they've been trying to just do more suicide prevention training. Their idea is we don't need to convince you. We don't need theory. We know people are killing themselves, and that's
so
enough for us to do
about
something
that.
About it.
Yeah.
Whether you're straight, gay, transgender, it doesn't matter. And so they wanted to involve the LDS Church in this. They needed some funding to basically qualify more of their group as trainers. So they went to the LDS Church and said, "Will you help fund this suicide prevention training?" And the church said yes through the charitable arm, LDS Foundations. They gave them $25,000. And I was at that training this last Saturday, and it's called QPR. It stands for Question, Persuade, Refer. It's kind of like CPR for suicide. And that's – so I guess while people are arguing or maybe people are pushing back on each other, their idea is like we're just going to go to work and we're going to make sure people know what to do. There was some LDS local leadership in that training. Not a lot. But I think for them it's a start.
But that relationship – taking that money, affirmation, taking that money from the LDS Church when the church would not make these direct links, or at least acknowledge some factor, religion playing some factor in all of this, was too much for some. Kimberly Anderson was one. She's going to be on the program a little bit later. She believed that affirmation accepting that money, she called it morally reprehensible.
Right. And I think Kimberly's point is that this doesn't erase what's happening culturally, that you can't make good and offer some funding and then kind of settle the issue at hand. I think she has a strong point there. I think the rest of the Board of Affirmation felt like, well, we're doing something with this money that's going to help prevent suicide, so that's good enough for us. And so I think there's this awkward tension right now. I think some people would like the church to meet them more in the middle, and they're not seeing that. People say there's this thing in the LGBT Mormon community where the church takes one step forward, two steps back, where they'll show a little bit of acceptance and then kind of retreat. Last year, they said that they supported the Love Loud concert, you know, for LGBT youth. And then in general conference, you saw Dallin Oaks, one of the apostles at the time, or maybe it was in the First Presidency at the time. He's kind of doubled down on the church's stance that homosexuality is a sin, that it's a marriage between a man and a woman. And so I think that in this community, they feel kind of like this whiplash effect where it's like, well, you tell us one thing and then you do another. And so I think there's a lot who are saying the church has a lot to do before willing to really have an honest discussion. And then there's others who say, well, we're going to start talking now.
It's such an ethical dilemma, I think, for people with affirmation and other groups, because if you say too much about this link between youth suicide and LDS Church policies, it just makes the LDS Church become defensive and withdraw. But on the other hand, if you don't hold the LDS, if you believe that and you don't hold the LDS Church accountable or try to get them to be accountable, then that's not accomplishing something. It's just a weird balance.
It is a weird balance. And it's worth saying that the church's stance towards its gay members has changed over time, right? We've seen substantial changes in the last 10, 20, 30 years. They've also doubled down on some stances. And I think that's where people have experienced most pain, which is that they've really said that this is a sin, that this is, you know, that you're basically not living the life of a Mormon if you're living an out LGBT lifestyle. And so right now, I think the tension is there. I think that there's things that keep bubbling up that show that people who are trying to live in the middle, it's still difficult, it's still challenging. And ultimately, I don't think that anytime soon there's going to be a moment where the church either takes full ownership of this, but I think there might be a little leeway.
It's Lee Hale, KUER's religion reporter. We have a link to his latest story on our website, radiowest.org. I should also mention the number for Utah's crisis line again, 801-587-3000. Lee, thanks.
Thanks.
We'll take a break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West from KUER.
KUER's community of sustainers do so much for the station. Because of their ongoing contributions, we're able to bring you award-winning local news, NPR coverage, Radio West, and our own podcasts. Starting at $5 a month, you can be a sustainer too. Then, next time you hear a story you love, you'll know you made it happen. Become a sustainer at KUER.org.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're asking, can you or should you blame the LDS Church in part for a staggering increase in youth suicides in Utah? The LDS Church, as you know, has some controversial policies about homosexuality and same-sex relationships. But is there a direct connection? This is complicated, as we've been talking about. So we're asking, what is it we can actually say for sure about all of this? And does religion hurt or does it help? Joining us now on the program is Justin Dyer. He's an assistant professor of religious education at Brigham Young University. He was also faculty in the School of Family and is principal investigator for BYU's Family Foundations of Youth Development Project, which looks at how family, community, and faith contribute to kids' success. He's joining us here in the studio, and we need to point out he is not speaking for the LDS Church or for Brigham Young University. And Professor, welcome to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me here. Appreciate it.
I guess I want to begin with just the basic. How complicated is all of this? I mean, the real basic question is, why is it that Utah's youth suicide rate is going up?
That's such a great question. And in fact, what Utah did was they partnered with the Centers for Disease Control, the CDC, and they came in 2016, 2017, and did a deep dive into all of this and examined numerous data sets. And they did their own data collection on all various things. And what they found was what in many ways you would expect to find in Utah, as you'd find in other places. A lot of the things they found were risk factors, were substance use. 20% of those who died by suicide, the youth who died by suicide between 2011 and 2015, had some kind of illegal substance in them. Mental health problems, of course. Those that didn't have a connection to religion were at higher risk. Family problems. All of these things the CDC seemed to indicate were factors associated with it, and these are factors that you would really find anywhere else.
But is that the salient point for you, that Utah's actually not any different from those other places?
Well, that was their point, was that Utah really isn't that much different. When they discussed the LDS Church, it was only in the positive in terms of the analyses that were done. LDS youth were at lower risk of suicide than other youth. Now, again, it's important to note that none of these data invalidate anybody's individual experience. That's really important in all this. So we get into all these numbers, but as Lee earlier said, we need to understand individual experiences as well. But when you're trying to tie LDS Church and the increase in suicide rates, then it's important to follow the data. But again, those don't invalidate the real difficulties that some people experience. And we want to make sure that we don't do that.
Yeah. But to the point, for example, Ellen DeGeneres on that program, it's not, as Lee mentioned, it's not the first time people have made that connection. They've just said definitively the reason these numbers are going up is because of the LDS Church's position. What you've said and written about, you did an op-ed for the Deseret News, which we'll link to, by the way, on our website. It's just an oversimplified way of looking at it. Just give me your sort of reaction to this idea that there is a, I guess, causal link. At least that's what you're hearing from Ellen DeGeneres and others, I suppose.
Right. That does seem to be an oversimplified view of these things. Again, there are individual experiences that may differ from the overall experience. But the research, just general research in the area, is would show that religion has a protective factor for suicide ideation. Now, if you're talking specifically, okay, we have this increase. The CDC did that deep dive into 2011 to 2015. And during that time period, it's interesting, what they found was that 15% of the suicides during that time period were LGBTQ youth. Now, that number is actually really fuzzy because they weren't able to identify the sexual orientation of most of them. But that number 15 does seem to be corroborated with the Family Foundation's data of Utah youth, where we find that of all the youth who either were seriously considering suicide or actually attempted suicide, 15% of those, 14 to 15% of those were LGBTQ youth.
So, is that significant?
Oh, that's very significant. Yeah. One, because it's overrepresentative, right? It's overrepresentative of the LGBTQ community. There's nobody that's arguing that LGBTQ youth aren't at increased risk and are a group that has to be understood. Yeah. and helped. Though if it is that 15%, then of the increase between 2011 and 2015, only a small portion of that increase can be due to LGBTQ youth suicide, and that's still 85% of the overall suicide rate that's unexplained. And so the important point I think the CDC makes is they say that there is no one-size-fits-all approach to preventing suicide. They go on, they say multiple factors are involved. Therefore, a multi-component, comprehensive, and coordinated suicide prevention efforts that target and address multiple risk factors and protective factors will likely be the most effective.
True. Okay, great. Stipulate that point. But can it also be said that a particular religion, in this case the LDS churches, their position, which has changed, or mm-hmm. at least they've certainly ramped it up. The policy in 2015 marked a significant change. Couldn't it be said that is having some kind of impact on the way young people are thinking about their disposition within a faith, their own situation? I mean, can we not make that inference?
Absolutely. I think that's unquestionable that these things that have gone forward have changed the tone and changed the thoughts and understanding. And with any group, and this is important, with any group, you'll find people that feel they're on the margins. And that doesn't excuse any group from working with those individuals. In fact, it makes it incumbent upon those organizations where people feel on the margins to engage with those individuals. And I think that's what you see within the LDS churches, that they're trying to engage more with that, the Mormon and Gay website, where you have experiences of LGBTQ LDS individuals.
But why on their website, where they're talking about suicide, do they not say anything at all about LGBTQ people? That seems conspicuous.
That's a good question. I don't have a specific...
And you're not speaking for the church, I know.
I don't have a specific answer for that. I guess I would point to the issue that we do need to have a general approach to this, and that we need to speak to a lot of people so that we don't think that this suicide in Utah is just an LGBTQ issue. Again, they're a group that must have individualized attention. But we need to have a general approach as well, lest we forget that 85% of those other youth who are really struggling. Because I think the message does tend to boil down to, as you said in your intro, it does tend to boil down to LGBTQ youth. And while they absolutely need attention, there are a lot of children who are not within that group that are in great pain and struggling. And to pass them by would also be a tragedy. So I think a general approach is hopefully the one that's going to capture with and connect on the most levels.
What do you make of this, the rising rates in the West in general and in rural parts? What any sense of what it is? I mean, again, we talked with Lee earlier, just some of the theories. Altitude is one. Maybe whatever the circumstances are going on in increased uses of drugs, for example, or opioids in rural communities, I suppose. Who knows, right? But do you have a sense of all of that?
That's the real question in all this, and that's what the CDC, again, came in specifically to try and determine. Yeah. And they didn't come up with anything that we really don't already know. It could be, for example, and it's been placed here, social media and technology use, which has been on the increase. In fact, in our Family Foundations of Youth Development project, we find that about 12% of males, of youth who are males, have meet the criteria for having a video game addiction. I mean, and now we have video games in our pockets, right? And so that could be in combination with other things, right? So you have a lot of things going on here. And so that certainly could be. I mean, the rise of social media the last few years, I mean, almost all of our sample here in Utah of youth have a smartphone. And you would not have found that 10, 15, 20 years ago. Now, this is conjecture here because we don't know that. Yeah. But there are these other factors that have been tied to depression, suicidality that are rising.
One of the questions that you deal with in a paper that you wrote is, what is the relative value of religion here? That what role does religion play in this story? And one of the things you write is that religiosity likely serves as a buffer here. Talk a little bit more about that, because this is for some counterintuitive, especially when you're talking about LGBTQ youth, that it's religion, in fact, is severe. It makes you feel guilty and shameful. Why is that not, in fact, mm-hmm. what you're at least part of the what you're thinking?
That's such a good question. It's also important to acknowledge that while some people do feel shame and guilt within religion, religion, as far as I can see, didn't invent that. People feel shame at school. They feel shame in their family. They feel shame at work. And so whenever we are seeing that that's occurring, we need to work to backpedal that. So the message, so a few things on, well, why is religion tied to lower rates of suicide? There's various components to that. One is that religion provides meaning in suffering. When I'm suffering and I believe in a God and I believe in a plan, the suffering makes sense. It's also a researcher I love called that said that religion can provide compensation for what we lose in this life. So you lose something, you lose a loved one, you lose whatever it is, or that religion, if you believe in a God, says, well, that will be compensated. Also, religion teaches that God doesn't want you to die, that God wants you to stay living. Another reason, of course, is the social connections. You go to church, and if there's somebody that is regular there but they stop going, people tend to wonder and ask about it. I mean, the ministry focus of the church is just fantastic in the notion that we need to be aware of every individual and what their circumstance is. And the last one is social integration that is seen as helpful in there, where you feel a part of something. You feel a part of something greater than yourself. Now, not everybody benefits equally from that. It's clear that some people don't derive those benefits.
Yeah.
And so whenever that happens, we need to be on the lookout for that. And where is somebody not deriving that benefit, and how can we then bring them in?
It seems like you play what you just said against then, I'm trying to think of a young person who is gay in their Mormon congregation, is hearing stories about the policies of their church, and then there are some in the congregation who are loving and welcoming, others who are, you know, not.
Sure.
It's got to be confusing. And it's – so, I mean, it seems like you have to – it seems like there's a – it's impossible to balance those components here.
Well, I think we're trying. I think that's the strong effort. And again, this would be in church and school and really almost any organization that you face these kinds of things. But with, again, the Mormon and Gay website, where you have church leaders talking about it, talking about love, if we could follow that more closely, I think we'd be in a much better position. In the op-ed, you noticed the quote from Elder Ballard about how we need to reach out to our LGBTQ brothers and sisters. We love them. And no matter what policy is in place, that should not in any way indicate that they are of less value within our congregations, of less value. And in fact,
but it's hard to say that they're not of less value when they can't have sex with a partner, when they can't get married. I mean, that just implies that they're of less value, and that's got to be difficult.
I think some people might take it that way, but from everything I've heard from the LDS church leaders, I mean, that's not in any way what they're trying to indicate. Absolutely not.
You to the question, should the church – again, you're not speaking for the church or for BYU. So I'll ask you this question then. Should the church at least acknowledge some kind of relationship here, that there might be some LGBTQ young members who, because of doctrinal policies, might be struggling. Wouldn't it be helpful, at least, if they said something like that?
For me personally, their statements about the Love Loud and they're giving $25,000 to Affirmation. I mean, that seems to make a really important statement in terms of how they're thinking about it.
Finally, you said in your op-ed that it's important to note that suggesting a religion or any one religious organization is a primary cause of suicide deaths among youths is neither accurate, which we've talked about, mm-hmm. nor helpful. To that question of it not being helpful, you say this is not helping things. Say something about that, if you would, finally.
Sure. Michael Staley, and you've had him on the program before, he's with the Utah Medical Examiner's Office, and he studies youth suicides. And I think something he had to say was important on this. And he says it's never just one thing. He goes on to say, anybody reduces suicide or an explanation for our rate of suicide in any population to one or two things is sadly mistaken. I think that mentality is an impediment to us moving forward. And so if we misidentify what's going on, then we're treating the wrong thing. We need to make sure that we are identifying the right causes here. And for when we don't have the data, we ought to be as broad and general to capture as much as we can. And then as data come out, as our data begin to come out, we're going to be able to hone in more specifically on the areas where we need to target.
That's Justin Dyer. He's an assistant professor of religious education at Brigham Young University, was also faculty in the School of Family and principal investigator for BYU's Family Foundations of Youth Development Project. Joined us here in the studio. And Professor, thanks to you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Joining us now on the program is Kimberly Anderson, who works as a behavioral specialist in Sacramento, California. She's studying marriage, family, and child counseling at the University of San Francisco. Anderson is a transgender woman, a former Mormon who leads suicide prevention training in support of LGBTQ Mormons, and is joining us today from a studio in Sacramento. And Kimberly Anderson, welcome to you. Thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Doug. Thanks for having me on.
I should mention, and we referred to this earlier, that you resigned from the board of Affirmation because of this donation made by the LDS Church. Can you talk to me about this decision? At what point you decided that was just too far for you?
Well, it's important to remember that this suicide prevention effort, this QPR, suicide prevention and education training that we implemented, I was part of a committee, spirituality committee within the Board of Affirmation. We decided that this was our number one priority, spiritual need for our membership of Affirmation. And so we decided to look and research some protocols, some models that we could use in our training broadly and in specifically with our board. And I was working with a great – and still am working with a great group of people to implement this QPR, question, persuade, and refer training. We started with a very small budget, and as various things were added, components were added, and we kind of created a dream list, our initially very small budget kind of got bigger. And it was decided by the board to approach or to accept this grant from the LDS Foundation. And we decided to, take that money and start our training. We got resource materials sent out to our specific trainers. And then we responded to that grant, which was generous. We responded to that with a press release and an op-ed piece that was released on the Affirmation Facebook page, and people can go there and see that. The dissenting voice and voices, trauma-informed voices within the board, were bringing up concerns that would be felt and heard by our members. I was kind of one of the leading people in that, relatively small group of dissent and concern. And when it seemed that the emphasis of the grant was placed on the church, when the accolades were placed towards the LDS Church and the conversation was taken away from Affirmation, the conversation, the dialogue was taken away from queer people, It seemed to me that the voices of the people that were hurt the very, very most by this weren't being heard, weren't being acknowledged. And I thought at that point that I needed to make a stand. And so I resigned my position as vice president, which was not an elected position. It was I served at the request of Carson Tueller, our president.
Yeah. Why did the church give that money, do you think?
Well, the first reason is we asked them to and they said, sure. And so there is kind of a tacit, it seems, approval that they knew where the money was going. They seemed – and this is important to note that it's the LDS Foundation, which clearly there is a tie to the LDS Church. But they knew what we were going to use it for. They knew it was specifically for suicide prevention and education for our queer people and for our allies and friends. And they knew that that would be extended at times in our trainings towards LDS leaders and general members. And so I think there is a if unspoken – acknowledgement. It certainly is an olive branch. It seems to be maybe a slightly dried up and shriveled olive branch, but it certainly to me seems that they are seeing that, yeah, that here's a group with boots on the ground that are willing to do something and meet the population and do something real with this money, do something real with education and prevention.
But why not say something? Why not make a connection in on their website where they're talking about suicide? There's absolutely no mention whatsoever made of LGBTQ youth. That's got to be something that maybe sounds confusing to you and you don't understand or certainly don't agree with.
Well, I certainly can't speak for the LDS Church.
I'm not asking you to speak for the LDS Church. I want your opinion. What's your opinion about that?
Why they're not saying anything about that?
Yes.
I think they're afraid too. I think they're afraid to acknowledge that. And also Elder Oaks has said that the church doesn't seek apologies, nor does it give them. And I think that the church may feel that by making a verbal connection that they're looking – or that they would appear to be making an apology when that's been very clearly stated that the church does not make apologies. So I feel that they've painted themselves into a corner where they can say, yeah, we love you. We want you. We need you. There's a place for you in our congregations. There's a place for you in our kingdom. But we can't say we're sorry, because if we do, then we have an admission to guilt. And I don't think Elder Oaks is ready to do that with many different aspects or controversial topics within Mormonism right now, specifically LGBT issues.
Kimberly Anderson, what can you say about the way you explain this relationship between the rising suicide rates and the LDS Church's positions? Do you see a connection there, whether it be anecdotal or not? How do you explain it? How do you understand it and talk about it?
Well, I do see a lot of anecdotal correlation. I speak with hundreds and hundreds of queer Mormons and former Mormons. I've read many, many notes left after a death by suicide. They're tragic, many of those notes. Allude very strongly to the feelings of shame and guilt associated with teachings heard at LDS church buildings. I've spoken with people who respond to those deaths by suicide, and those people that respond to them tell me stories, graphic stories that I will not repeat in detail here, but stories about these people that have chosen to leave early. Near their bedside is a copy of Spencer W. Kimball's Miracle of Forgiveness left open to the chapter called Crimes Against Nature, speaking to homosexual behavior, transgender behavior, and how damaging that is for them. It's also important to note that I'm really trying to point towards research the way that Dr. Dyer is too. He says, let's follow the research. In fact, in his interview, he said just now, it's important to follow the data.
Yeah.
And so what I do is I do follow the data. As a student of psychology right now, pursuing a degree in counseling psychology, it's incumbent upon me to follow the data. So the data that's recent, the data that speaks specifically to LGBT individuals, has been done by Dr. Brian Simmons of the University of Georgia.
Yeah, I want to talk about that. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because some of the data here show nearly 75% of LDS people who identify as being LGBTQ have experienced trauma. Let's talk about that, because this is something that you keyed on in terms of particular data. What are you seeing in that response, trauma?
I want to read the quote that's particularly interesting from Dr. Simmons' study. And it's important to remember or to know that I don't speak for Dr. Simmons.
Sure.
He says overall nearly three-quarters, 73.4%, of respondents would have likely met criteria for PTSD diagnosis based on the presence of a damaging or extremely damaging religious belief or experience. So there, in his study, he asked a significant amount of LDS identifying people, queer people specifically, what doctrines you heard in church that you felt damaging. He narrowed them down to 10. And out of those 10 doctrines, they were heard repeatedly, you know, often enough to be statistically viable. And then he quantified them into damaging and extremely damaging. 75% of the people who responded who were adult, it's important to say that they were adult LGBT people, they would have likely qualified for a PTSD diagnosis if one could be formally given. Now, a PTSD diagnosis can't be given unless you're, you know, properly assessed by a trained professional. But the evidence and the data is nudging us towards these 75% of the people qualifying for that diagnosis. Now, his study, Dr. Simmons' study, is not about suicidal ideation or suicidality. It is about PTSD. It is about religious correlation between PTSD and queer people and Mormonism. Hmm. So it is the latest data that intersects those three components. So when Dr. Dyer says, let's follow the data, here's the data. That's the data I'm following. I can powder all of the things I talk about with lots of anecdotes. But at the end of the day, here's the information that I can share.
It's interesting to trace that trauma back to the days, you say, when leaders like Elder Boyd K. Packer and President mm-hmm. Spencer Kimball were condemning homosexuality in rather strong terms. Mm-hmm. I mean, I suppose you could trace that sense of trauma to that time.
Well, certainly the respondents of the survey, you know, they're adults, they're 21 or 18 and older at the time of the survey. They would have received many of the damaging messages 20 years ago, what was being taught 20 years ago. This is Boyd K. Packer's To the One speech, the Little Factory speech. This is the heyday of the Spencer W. Kimball Miracle of Forgiveness era. This is the meat and the potatoes of the doctrines that says you would be better off dead than a gay or transgender member of the church. So the leaders that are in place today, the adults that heard these traumatic messages today, they heard them 20 years ago. Now, it is true, Dr. Dyer talks about the stance of the church softening and changing, and that's wonderful to see. But the core doctrines, the core beliefs, they haven't changed. So those damaging messages that are inducing trauma, those damaging messages such as homosexuality is a sin, I would not be exalted with a heterosexual marriage, a stronger belief in God would change my homosexuality or gender identity, those doctrines are still actively being taught at church today. And when we ask or require our queer youth to attend church, we're inducing trauma-producing symptoms or trauma-producing doctrines and information into these young people at a rate of nearly 75%. That's pretty compelling to me. That's the data that I follow.
Hmm. I wanted to ask you, how do you react to something that Dr. Dyer mentioned earlier that, and we talked a little bit about that, suggesting religion is a primary cause of suicide deaths? It just isn't helpful. Do you agree with that? Let's set that aside, or what do you make of that?
So religion is interesting. We have this idea of an extrinsic religious belief and an intrinsic religious belief. And then that talks to or can speak to insider and outsider language. I think studies are clear that if you're an insider of that community, those religious beliefs can be a protective factor. Hmm. But if you're an outsider, if your belief system doesn't quite line up with the insider group, now you're an outsider.
Yeah. Hmm.
And even though those insider messages of love and inclusion that are being said, that are understood by the insiders, are like, yes, this is great, this is wonderful, and they are.
You don't think those apply to you, though, if you're outside, right?
No, exactly. You're an outsider, and you hear those messages, and you want to believe, and you want to belong, and you look for that place that they say, here is your place, and you look for it, and you don't find it, and you're continually reminded that you're an outsider. And when you're an outsider, when you're feeling feelings of isolation and loneliness, those are contributing factors to suicidal ideation and suicidality.
Hmm. I wanted to ask you, Kimberly, finally, talk a little bit about what it is affirmation is actually doing and what they're saying to people, what is working, if you can put it that way, or what's the message you're trying to convey to as part of these trainings?
Well, since I've resigned, I can no longer speak for Affirmation.
Yeah.
But I'm happy to share what we're doing together as the team that I helped to form, and I'm still on. I consider myself still on. We held three separate QPR training sessions at the conference last weekend. We held our first one in Spanish, which thrills me to death. I've worked with saints and former saints in Mexico and in Bogota in the past year. And for me, the idea that we're reaching out to our Latin American members of Affirmation initially as suicide training, that to me is very rewarding. Our first session had about 26, 28 people in it in their Spanish-speaking session. The following day, we held two more QPR sessions. We had a grand total of about 130 people who are trained as gatekeeper trainers. Hmm. Those people will go out to their communities. They will be in touch with the people who might be suicidally active or currently suicidally active or considering suicide. They have increased skills for learning, listening, empathy. They have increased skills for persuading these people to stay alive, and they have increased skills to refer them to trained and competent mental health professionals. So we are actually doing something that's very, very important, and it's neat to hear in the initial 2, 3, 4 days after the training, we have many stories coming back that said we have made a difference. Our trainers have been able to reach out and meet those people and do an active QPR intervention, and there's at least one story of at least one life being saved.
It's Kimberly Anderson. She leads suicide prevention training in support of LGBTQ Mormons. We should also mention her Mama Dragon Story Project, which produces portraits and essays from mothers with LGBTQ children. You can find links to that on our website, radiowest.org. Kimberly joined us today from a studio in Sacramento. Kimberly, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Doug.
We should also mention there are links to resources if you or someone you know needs help. The Utah Crisis Line phone number is 801-587-3000. Radio West is a production of KUER News, the program directed by Tim Slover, produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.